The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. The remedy for boredom has arrived. The People's Podcast is here, and we're going for a ride with the Butcher Babies. That's right. Heidi Shepherd and Carla Harvey are here with us. They've got a new album out, Take It Like a Man, and a tour starting next Tuesday in Philadelphia with Cradle of Filth. Plus, they got some pretty crazy stories about life on the road, truck stop showers, losing their passports in England. Actually, they were stolen. I know because we were there. Touring in their own RV, meeting Janet Jackson, and what it's like being two females in the male-dominated world of heavy metal. We'll talk about the early Butcher Baby shows that featured the gimmicks like the blood, the microphones made out of butcher knives, which was cool, and why Heidi and Carla gave up the electrical tape on the nipples look, which they did as a tribute to the legendary Plasmatics frontwoman Wendy O. Williams. I knew that from the start. If you don't know who Wendy O. Williams is, you will by the time this podcast is over. Go check her out on YouTube and go check us out on iTunes and hit the subscribe button. You'll want to subscribe once you finish listening to the Butcher Babies on Talk is Jericho. You're never going to want to miss an episode, and if you subscribe, you never will. And also, please leave Talk is Jericho a 5-star rating and a comment or two. I was looking at the iTunes charts the other day, and we were 150 of the top on the list of top podcasts, which is probably about 2 million podcasts. So to be 150 isn't bad, but let's keep that moving. Go on to iTunes, check us out, give us a 5-star rating, and subscribe to Talk is Jericho. Lots of stuff going on this week. Crazy how many people have passed away in the last week. I mean, Lemmy passed away at the end of 2015. But since then, I mean, David Bowie died. How about Celine Dion's husband? And then her brother dies a couple days later. Dan Haggerty, Grizzly Adams, or Alan Rickman, of course, from Die Hard, from Dogma. Natalie Cole passed away. I mean, just all these people dying in 2016. So rest in peace to all of them. And cancer is a bitch, man. So go get checked up. Make sure you get checked up. We don't want to lose any more people to cancer so early on in this year. But once again, rest in peace to David Bowie, one of the all-time greats, one of the all-time legends in rock and roll, right up there with, you know, McCartney and Elton John and Mick and Keith and all those type of guys. I think the reason why people have kind of forgotten about Bowie over the last 10 years and don't really talk about him as far as being completely legendary is because he hasn't really done much. And he's kind of keeping a low profile, except for the last couple of years, put out a couple of records. And then we found out that he had cancer that eventually killed him for 18 months. And nobody knew. How do you keep that secret in this day and age that you had cancer for 18 months for a guy as huge as Bowie? But that just shows what kind of a trusted team that he had around him. So go back and check out the Let's Dance record with Stevie Ray Vaughan on guitar. You might not know that Stevie Ray played guitar on that whole album. Almost played on the tour, but they couldn't work it out. But yeah, you can just hear those amazing leads on Let's Dance. You forgot how huge of a record Let's Dance was. Modern Love, Cat People, China Girl. So we're never going to forget David Bowie. I was just watching him on Live Aid. He was amazing on that. He also wrote All the Young Dudes, which is a great tune that he did not sing on. He wrote it, though. Actually, I think he sang backgrounds on it, but that was by Mott the Hoople. So lots of tributes, lots of stuff going on. And like I said, we will never forget all of those people that have passed away. But talking about something that's very much alive is the rumor, which is not so much a rumor anymore, that the Bullet Club has signed with the WWE. And the Bullet Club, of course, is a huge faction from New Japan Pro Wrestling. And not the entire club is coming, but four of the main members. I'm talking about Doc Gallows. I'm talking about Carl Anderson. I'm talking about Shinsuke Nakamura, who is probably one of the best workers in Japan right now. And, of course, leading the way, AJ Styles, a Talk is Jericho alumni, who is coming to the WWE, finally. I think when he left TNA, there wasn't a lot of interest in AJ because of his age, maybe. And then he went and just completely kicked ass all across the world, and more specifically in Japan, where he became the New Japan World Champion. They're all coming to the WWE en masse. So the question is now, what do you do with them when they get here? Okay, do you take them to NXT first or take them straight to the main roster? Now, I know WWE's tradition now is to have the guys go to NXT first and kind of cut their teeth and learn. I think that's the wrong move at this point. I think it's better to have them enter straight into the main roster, straight into the WWE. Now, maybe they're going to be hooked up with Finn Balor. I've heard rumors that they're going to be the Balor Club. That's fine. Have them all debut together in the WWE, because I think it's going to lose a little bit of the impact and a little bit of the surprise if they go to NXT. And plus, a lot of people don't know who they are. I mean, as crazy as it seems, guys, not everybody reads the internet. Not everybody goes online to find out what's going on. A lot of people just watch the show and check it out. And I think that's one of the big things, is that people won't know who these guys are. And it's going to make a big impact when you get these five, basically, quote unquote, nobodies, no names, unknowns, who are going to come in and just be killing it at the highest of levels, both in work rate, personality, and of course, together as a group. Let's think of the groups that have come to the WWE over the years that did great right off the bat. Radicals pops to mind. Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero, Perry Saturn. They brought them in as a team, as a group, and they ran roughshod for a while. I think the best example of that in the recent times is Nexus, when you had Wade Barrett and Ryback, who was Skip Sheffield at the time. What's his name? PJ, Justin Gabriel. All those guys came in as a big group, as a big gang. Of course, don't forget about Daniel Bryan, and dominated. And they came and they destroyed John Cena. They tore apart the ring and they made such an impact. I think that the best way to take advantage of the Bullet Club / Balor Club / whatever they're going to call them is to have them come in en masse and just completely destroy on the way to WrestleMania. It'll create a buzz amongst hardcore smart fans. Smart marks, if you will. That's all of us. I'm a smart mark. And also creating a buzz about people who have no idea who they are. Who is this Balor Club? Who is this Finn Balor? Who is this AJ Styles? You know, that's one way of doing things. Another way is having Finn and AJ in the same team. That might be too much because they're both great workers and they're both have great characters and both know exactly who they are. So right now it's a good problem to have. And how do you debut these guys all at once to make the biggest impact? I think it's a huge blow to New Japan. I think they will probably, you know, everyone rebounds, but it just goes to show that you have to have people locked into contracts, because the WWE is always out there like a big, giant, angry shark that, you know, sees a school of fish and they're going to eat it away. You know, you got to be careful when you have talent, because the WWE is out there and they're aggressive. They're signing a lot of different people from a lot of different areas, because now it's not just about signing talent and just having them wait. They can go down to NXT and be working in front of, you know, sold out crowds for the next year, for the next 2 years. Some arena crowds, as we saw at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, as we're going to see this year in Dallas at WrestleMania, all these other places. So WWE will be signing as many people as they can, I think. They just signed La Sombra from Mexico, a huge star there. They're just picking whoever they want. And, of course, everybody wants to go to WWE. You can't blame them. It's the biggest show in town. You know, it's not the only show in town, but it's the biggest show in town. And for guys that, you know, a guy like AJ or Carl or Gallows, they're guys that got families here in the States. You don't want to be working in Japan all the time. It was fun to work in Japan for me when I was in my 20s. I had no responsibilities, nothing to tie me down. You could go to Japan for, you know, 4 weeks and not care. You know, you got, you know, girls over there. You got your friends over there. You don't have to worry about it. Once you get married and have kids, I don't want to go to Japan for 4 weeks. You know, I would rather not. So I would rather work for a company that's based in the States, where I can go home every week. You're gone 3-4 days a week, but you're still home. So I think a guy like AJ Styles, plus the fact he's in his mid-30s, maybe even late-30s at this point, it was a no-brainer for him to end up in the WWE, and it was a no-brainer for the WWE to sign him, and I think it's very, very exciting to have these guys coming in. Of course, the other thing, the X factor, is Nakamura. Huge in Japan, but as we know, coming from Japan to the United States is a different world. How will he blend in? You know, name one Japanese star that really made a mark for himself in the States recently. I can think of Tajiri. That's it. I know Hideo Itami is down in the NXT right now. Haven't seen much of him. Came down and got hurt. So that Nakamura's here. he could be a main event in the Tokyo Dome and draw 12 people to the armory here in the States. No one knows who he is. How will he acclimate his style to WWE style? How will he acclimate his character to WWE characters, to the WWE audience, to the WWE universe? My biggest advice to him, same advice to Sombra. It was my same advice to Sin Cara, the original, before he left town. Learn English. You have to learn English if you want to make it in this country as a performer, as a wrestler in show business. It's the number one most important thing. So Nakamura, if you're listening, which I'm sure you are, who doesn't, learn English. You should be on that Rosemary Stone, who is the cousin of Rosetta Stone, who really invented the linguistic tapes. Go learn English. If you're coming from a foreign country, learn English. I didn't learn English. Didn't learn Japanese when I was in Japan. I tried very, very hard, but it wasn't as dependent on promos and character outside of the ring as it is here in the WWE. I learned how to read Japanese, so at least I could go into a restaurant, order off the menu, or I could read Burn magazine, Japanese rock magazines. But that was just my personal choice. I tried to learn how to speak Japanese, but it was very, very difficult. But like I said, if you want to learn, and if you want to, really, really make it in this country, you have to learn English. So that will endear you to the fans, and it'll endear you to the boss, and endear you to your coworkers. So all people coming in, learn English. Nakamura, learn English. La Sombra, learn English. Thankfully, AJ knows English already. So does Carl Anderson, and so does Doc Gallows. When will they arrive? When will they arrive in the WWE is the question. I know when the Butcher Babies are going to arrive on Talk is Jericho, and that's coming up very, very soon. And one of the reasons why I'm able to have the Butcher Babies on this podcast, why I'm able to talk to you and give advice to Nakamura about how he should speak English, is because of my great sponsors. And my favorite one right now, DDP Yoga, and the DDP Yoga Now app, which is an incredible app. I'm going to use it later on. All of DDP's workouts on your phone, on your device. You don't have to worry about DVDs. You don't have to worry about the same workout over and over again. It changes constantly. It's a living, breathing app. If you haven't downloaded it yet, you need to. It's the perfect time, okay? That's how I do my DDP Yoga workouts, right on my phone, on the app, okay? The workouts are all on the app. Plus, you get access to live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center. Very, very rad. You guys know how much I believe in DDP Yoga, how much it's helped me, how much it's kept me in tip-top shape to be able to go into the ring and do what I do, still at the highest level. And you know my DDP Yoga story, how it saved my career. And I want to share that with you, okay? DDP is going to help you the same way it helped me and give you a great deal in the process. To find out about it, go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And when you purchase DDP Yoga for yourself, you'll also get 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. I said 3, 1, 2, 3. And it's free. That means you don't have to pay anything. It means you get the app for free, all right? You get it? And it is an incredible app, like I said. You get so much more than just access to the DDP Yoga workouts, which are constantly changing, by the way. You also get recipes, access to DDP's cooking shows, and tools to help you track your progress. Plus, you can earn rewards through the app to redeem for some cool prizes and DDP Yoga merch. The more workouts you do, the more points you get and the more prizes you get. If it's motivation you need to get started, then you can also check out all the amazing inspirational videos that Dallas and his crew put together. You can see all of these transformation video stories at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You won't believe the success stories, but you can believe it because I am one of those success stories. Get started on DDP Yoga today. It's one of the best decisions you can make for your health. Take advantage of this special offer, you sexy beast, you. Get the lowest price for DDP Yoga and 3 free months of access to the DDP Yoga Now app by going to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You're going to love it. But don't just take my word for it. Read the incredible reviews it's getting for both iOS and Android. Go read them. Don't miss out on the exclusive DDP Yoga offer at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Once again, the best price on DDP Yoga plus 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. Change your life. Get in the best shape of your life and go do it today. ddpyoga.com/Jericho, daddy. And speaking of apps, here's another one for you. Podcast One has just released a brand new version of the Podcast One app. It's got a bunch of new features, and it's way easier to use than the one you've been using. You can get it on the App Store, Google Play, or the Podcast One website. And after you download the new Podcast One app, don't forget to leave a good review, all right? So go get the new Podcast One app and use it to check out the brand new podcast, Chilling Tales. It's a scripted mystery podcast with a new story every week. It was top 10 in iTunes last week. That's true. Give it a listen after you listen to Talk is Jericho, and you'll hear why. Chilling Tales. Go check it out.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha F335 acoustic guitar, just $99. Or get a Luna Soprano ukulele, only $49. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing. Lessons for the beginner on your list. And gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center.
This is Talk is Jericho.
So I feel really bad because I'm super tardy. There's a famous Van Halen song where he goes, I don't feel tardy. Well, I feel really tardy right now.
And you are really tardy.
Detention.
Do you want us to tell you how tardy you are?
Tell me.
You were an hour and a half late for our date.
Hour and a half late for
our
date?
Hour and a half late.
See, but usually it's the girls that make the guys wait. So I decided to make you guys wait today.
You made it double
whammy for you. So we're here with Carla and Heidi from Butcher Babies. And I'm excited to do this interview with you because I feel like in a lot of ways that our bands are kind of parallel.
Yeah.
Because we kind of have met each other at times throughout the growth of the bands over the last 5 years or so.
Absolutely.
And I remember the first time I saw you guys was in Vegas at Uproar. It was like a 48-hour festival.
Oh,
or something.
Yeah. 48-hour festival. Yeah. We were we played the festival, but we also did the after party with Steel Panther. That was really fun.
Right. And there was, because we did an after party too.
I think you, I
at
think
the
we
Hard
were
Rock
all
or
on
something.
It.
Or maybe we're all at it.
Yeah.
I don't remember, but I do remember that they were saying, Josta, Josta, a bunch of babies. You got to see these guys, a bunch of babies. So I went and watched you guys, and it was just like this crazy, like visual attack. And I remember, obviously, I know what you think I'm going to say, but I'm not going to even say that. I'm just saying what I remember was your mic stands that were like bloody knives. Or your mic?
Yeah, our microphones were knives.
Yeah.
We went through that era where
The knifing era.
I still have those in my closet, by the way.
That would be a great name for a horror movie, The Knifing.
The Knifing.
That'd be so killer, The Knifing.
Or maybe a new
but
album
then,
name.
keep in mind, B-side perchance.
There we go.
So. But the band has grown so much since then, and that was, I think, back in 2011, maybe, or something
late 2010 is when that was, and we were, we'd been a band for about a year and a half at that point, and for us, it was really cool, kind of the first big thing that we had ever done. And back then, with the whole shock with the Wendy O. Williams attire.
Well, Butcher Babies, and I knew it from the start, that's from a Wendy O. Williams song,
exactly.
Right, obviously.
But it's funny, a lot of people don't know that. We constantly have to tell people in interviews and at the merch booth when we're doing signings and to kids, they don't know. A lot of people know who she was and what she did for women in metal and for metal music, period. So, but we don't mind reiterating where we got the name from. It's just
but
funny.
She wasn't really super popular where mainstream would know.
No, but she was a female who came out and did what she wanted when everyone would tell her, no, you can't sound like that. You can't dress like that.
Right.
You can't do metal.
Yeah.
Who are you to do any of this? And she went out and made, she created a stand, and she really just did what she wanted to do and paved the way for girls like us and girls in metal in general. So we really wanted to, honor her name through the band's name and the original attire. And, we couldn't blow up cars on stage. We taped knives to our microphones.
It's funny. I grew up in Canada, and there's this show called SCTV. It was like a sketch comedy show.
Yeah.
But they went to this phase where they'd have a musical act, and Wendy O. Williams was on. That's why I knew her from since I was probably 11 or 10 or whatever it was. And she did this stunt where there was, and I might not be saying this verbatim, but in my mind's eye, there was a helicopter with a rope ladder, and she drove a motorcycle off a cliff and jumped onto the rope ladder that was on the helicopter.
Wow.
That seems like something she would do.
We were planning that for next tour, and now I feel like crap because it's already been done.
Oh, we'll just edit this out. Sorry. But even that's what I said, talking about like even how she put the nipple tape on, that was your guys' original gimmick.
Yeah.
Obviously, almost like a homage slash ripped off completely from Wendy,
but
which I saw that from the start.
Was the
Of
point of it.
Yeah, that was the point. And the blood and everything. It was definitely an homage to our first lady.
Yeah, and if you know Wendy, you'd see that and go, okay, I get it. But of course, when you guys first come out, they're probably thinking, what is this? Because you guys got your boobs hanging out and you got bloody knives. And I mean, seriously, as you're talking about girls in rock and roll to begin with, you're automatically going to be judged because you're women.
Well, right? Naturally.
And that's just kind of the way that, because metal's a very guy-driven...
Yeah, it's a boys' club.
Boys' club, right? Mm-hmm. So what was your guys' mindset when you put this all together?
Well, when we started this band, you know, we just wanted to have some fun and play some punk metal on the Sunset Strip with our best friends and, you know, see what would happen. We had no idea that, you know, 5-6 years later, we'd be touring the world, you know, playing in front of 50,000 people at Hellfest in France. We honestly didn't know.
Download
but
and
the intention,
others.
And I think the intention should always be when you start playing music is just to have fun with it and see what happens.
Just,
and
yeah.
You know, I think people took notice because we were different. You know, we shook up the scene a little bit, especially here in LA. I mean, our early shows, they were always packed, and you know, people wanted to see what the hell was going on with us. And we really made a name for ourselves by being different. And
we continue to be different. You know, for us in that moment, it was fun. We were hoping to, you know, like she said, play some local fun shows, but we also had a message. Our entire lives, people, you know, how we look, they push us into a corner. They pigeonhole us to what you're supposed to be. I was approached to cut my hair. I had done a lot of different vocal things around town, and someone approached me, "You cut your hair, you don't wear makeup, we're going to make you 19 years old and you're going to be a country music artist."
Really?
And I was like, absolutely not. That's not, no, I would never, that's not me. I would not do that. That would be fake to me.
And I've had the same thing with me because I'm half black. People, oh, you should do R&B, something like that. That'd be good for you.
Right.
No way.
Jeez, thanks, Mr. Racism.
And, you know, I think.
You want to play bass too?
Actually, I do. I do want to play the bass.
Man. And I do sing country. No. See, for us, we kind of had that message, whereas, you know, don't push us into a corner of what we're supposed to look like, what we're supposed to sound like, dress like, all of that. Everything that Wendy fought for at the beginning. And so we definitely had that message going into it, kind of like a big, you know, fuck you to the cookie cutter music industry that really pushes women into certain directions. And I think that message was heard loud and clear, obviously.
But, you know, it's interesting, too, because once again, I talk about the parallels between Fozzy and Butcher Babies and that we've had to work twice as hard to get people's respect in a lot of ways because I'm in the band. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, is this a wrestling thing or is this some kind of a vanity project or a novelty thing? I'm sure you guys went through the same thing. Oh, is this just two hot chicks getting together? Is this a novelty?
Yeah.
And you're pushing it in their face and saying, this is the real deal. But when you have to work twice as hard to get that respect, you have people's respect for life.
I think so. And I think that doing that, putting that work in, working twice as hard is just, that's who we are. And it really fuels our fire having to do that. And
I love that aspect of it, of having to, you know, really go out there and prove something.
Because
it lights a fire under our ass.
When we first met, I think that's why we connected so well. You know, we met almost 8-9 years ago. Almost a decade ago, you know, playing in a cover band together. And
did you guys just show up one day?
She was already in this band, and I tried out for this band she was already a part of.
It was when MySpace was
in the MySpace days. I saw an ad for a band, and they needed another girl, and I was like, I want to be in that band. And it was like an instant connection because this was another a woman who shared the same ambition and drive as I did. And most of the women that I knew at the time were more interested in what their boyfriends were doing than what they could do with their own life. And definitely when it came to music, I didn't have any other female friends that were as ambitious as I was. So, you know, I think it was fate, you know, coming to LA. I'm from Detroit. She's from Provo, Utah. We both came here with this dream to do music. And, you know, we kind of came on our own and paved our little way on our own. And then we met each other and it was fate. And this thing that we've built is just, it's
insane.
Isn't
it funny how,
it's crazy how life works out.
I always love the stories of how two people meet. Like you come from Utah, you come from Detroit. And you meet to, you both want to be in a band. And just the concept of two girls singing, which we've never had, two front women in a band. I can't think of another band that has that.
Well, our old band had five. So
five front
I think
women.
We scaled it down
with
quite a
band?
Bit. Yes, okay. There were nine people on stage. It was absolutely terrible. I won't even give you the name of it because it's so terrible. But we used to do, you know, Monday nights. Steel Panther was always at either Key Club or House of Blues. Yeah. We were at the Roxy on Monday nights, and at,
Every Monday.
We had residencies all around the town. It was
a pretty cool time, you know, looking back and not being you know, in a bad place with it anymore. It was a cool time in our lives because we were doing residencies at the Viper Room and the Roxy and these iconic clubs on the Sunset Strip, you know, and that's how Steel Panther started out.
Sure.
And it was a really cool time in our lives.
Now again, what was the name of the band?
I mean,
I remember one time we did the whole blood thing in that band too, and we would basically tar and feather ourselves. Nice. There was a time where we had pillows that we had ripped open at the Viper Room. After we doused ourselves in blood, and the whole entire Viper Room was covered in feathers, and they told us we couldn't come back.
There was feathers.
Luckily, they brought us back as Butcher Babies much later.
That's why you don't want to tell them.
Yeah. There were feathers just blowing down the Sunset Strip. Yeah. It was pretty cool.
I remember opening the door, and it's just like feathers everywhere.
Right.
A beret of feathers.
Wow. But see, and that's what I'm talking about. But so you guys have this vision, and you had it from the start, mm-hmm. in wanting to be in a band and doing the classic move to L.A. to find your fame and fortune, and then you find each other.
Yeah.
So you were in a band with five front women. How did you pare it down to just you two guys?
Well, like I said, it all boiled down to that connection that we had. The other girls were, you know, nice girls, but they didn't have that spark, that desire to want to take it to another level. They liked going up on stage once a week and singing someone else's lyrics. Mm. We wanted to write our own music. We wanted to take it a step further, and we wanted to also, you know, we loved metal, so we wanted to play metal, not punk rock. Like,
yeah,
we were doing.
I mean, it just worked with the two of us. We connected on the ideas that we had and the love for metal that we had, and there came a point where we just decided, you know what, let's go for it. Let's do something original. Let's make a metal band. And when we decided to do that, when we left that band, I think the girls still hate us.
Okay.
And I know one of them, we reconnected and everything's cool, but those girls were not happy about that and not happy about what we created with Butcher Babies.
Hmm.
And so it was a little trying, but when we started it, we had talked to different people around town saying, we're going to do a metal band. No one believed us. Mm. Everyone's like, no, you can't do metal. No. How about indie rock, or how about this?
And well, that's what you would think, right? Especially with the way you guys, even the way you look, right? It's indie rock vibe, you know. Let's do that sort of thing. But your vocals are so crazy, like so heavy. You would never expect that coming from you guys.
Thank you.
You know what I mean? It's almost, you know, Angela from Arch Enemy had that same vibe. I'm not sure if their new singer does, but
you just look at this girl
and it's like you see she's a pinup girl, and then she's singing. It's like you don't put two and two together, and you guys have that vibe too.
And I think that's something that's really cool and special. People always say, well, you don't look like you're supposed to like metal. I just don't know what a girl metalhead is supposed to look like.
I don't know what a guy metalhead is supposed
that's
to look
thing.
Like
that's the thing. Like, I thought metal, right? Has a sound, not really a look.
That's a good call.
But yeah, I mean, for us, it's but I love that factor of getting up there, and people are like, oh, these two little girls, and I sound like a cheerleader when I talk, but when we get
like
up there
whatever.
And we scream, when we get up there and we scream, people are just kind of taken back and don't really know what to think.
There were sometimes the audience would just stare at us, and we would get so freaked out, you know, as we were playing, like, what, do they hate us? Do they not like us? What's going on? And then afterwards we do a meet and greet, and they say, this was the best thing we've ever seen in our lives. And then we realize that sometimes the audiences were just too shocked by what we were doing to really, you know, like, process it.
Now,
you know?
It's different.
Now it's way different.
I find too that people listen with their eyes at a show. They watch. And maybe not even listening to processing the exact, you know, music. If you're hitting a clam note or guitar or whatever, it doesn't really matter. They're watching the show and the spectacle. And you guys are obviously super cognizant of that because your show looks great.
Well, that's what we always wanted to with this band. The show has always been an important part of rock and roll. It lends to the, you know, escapism of music.
Right.
People want to see a show. They want to see rock stars. They want icons. Like, we used to have that back in the day. You know, everyone that you saw playing music was like a caricature kind of person, you know, whether it was Slash in his hat or, you know, it's anybody, Dio, these people, they were all characters, the guys in Motley Crue.
Freddie
and
American, Robert
the shows
Plant,
they
know,
put
Paul
on,
Stanley.
Like, everybody. And people want that, and they want to see a performance. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the 2000s came around, and I think there's a lot of really boring bands that just kind of stood there in their shoes and wore
wearing, like, cardigans
boring clothes
and sweaters and,
you know,
pajamas.
And we always, when we started this band, we wanted to, you know, make
shake
sure that
up.
The performance was always there. Yeah. Along with, obviously, the music is the most important thing. Without good songs, you don't have anything. But the performance is just as important, I think.
Well, that's true, Carla. And speaking of performances, I want to talk about the evolution about how you and Heidi started wearing shirts on stage and what made you give up the topless nipple taping gimmick, which kind of painted you in a corner, in my opinion. We're going to do that, though. We're going to discuss all of this and so much more after we give everyone one final shot at playing fantasy football this season. Yeah, you can still play fantasy football all through the playoffs at DraftKings.com. You can win crazy cash prizes this weekend. Head into the offseason as a fantasy football champion if you play at DraftKings. You know how easy it is to play fantasy football at DraftKings. You pick your players, you stay under the salary cap, you win, you make your money, and never give it up. That's right, you can create custom leagues with your family and friends, or you can play against fantasy players from all over the country. This is the last time you can play fantasy football this season. Go make it count. Go to DraftKings.com now, use my promo code Y2J, and play for free with your first deposit, okay? You can take home a huge chunk of change and a lifetime of bragging rights, and that's more important. Go to DraftKings.com, use my promo code Y2J for your free shot at huge cash prizes. This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. This is the big time. Go check it out now. All right, so Carla and Heidi from the Butcher Babies actually bought an RV to tour in. They skipped the whole van thing and invested in an RV in their early days. That RV is long gone, has been since replaced by a big fancy tour bus. We'll talk about what they're touring in and how they got it. But I wonder if TrueCar and the TrueCar app had been invented back then, if they could have used it to help find a replacement for the RV or found an RV there itself. All right, the TrueCar app is the only way to buy a car right now. I got it on my phone. I've been using it to figure out what kind of car to buy. I know it's been taking me a while, but I want to make sure I buy the right one, and TrueCar is helping me do that. You can search out the make, model, options, the color of your car you want, and see what other people paid for it on the TrueCar app. But the greatest thing about this app is you can lock in your guaranteed savings. You skip the hassle of negotiating with the dealer. You don't have to go there and drink bad coffee and look at some guy in a loud sports coat trying to sell you TrueCoat. You don't have to worry about that. You don't have to spend hours at the dealership. And also, TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. That is a lot of cash. $3,000? What could you do right now with $3,000? I know what I could do. I'll tell you what. And that's why TrueCar makes car buying so valuable and so easy. There's over 10,000 dealers in the TrueCar certified dealer network, and they sold over 2 million cars. All right. They got an app for everything else these days, but how many actually save you a serious chunk of change? A serious chunk of change, huh? Do the smart thing. Download the TrueCar app. Save time. Save money. Save us, Y2J, and never overpay. Download the TrueCar app, and you go do it today.
Now, here's something funny, and people will speculate and say, like, why did the Butcher Babies, or when was the natural evolution to, you know, put shirts on and get rid of the nipple tape? But here's a story, and you guys remember this, and people might not know this. Wolverhampton, England.
Oh, yes.
We did a show with Soil,
yep.
Fozzie, and Butcher Babies.
Yep.
And you guys had your passports and gear and everything stolen.
Yes, mm-hmm. That about an hour before the show.
Yeah.
Oh,
so tell
crazy.
Us about that. Like, there was like a parking garage.
It was a parking garage that was supposed to be the green room. And in fact, you guys had your meet and greet going on while it happened. And we went out to eat and just, you know, stupid me. I should have brought my wallet, and I had forgotten it and left it in the green room. And we come back and my wallet's gone. Her backpack's gone. Passports are gone. Clothes, makeup, everything's gone.
Electrical tape.
our 50 cent wardrobe was gone. No, just everything was gone. And so, yeah, that night we went up on stage in our pajamas. It was cute.
Was that the first night you guys
actually
ever
I remember I had to wear jeans and that Plasmatics t-shirt I have that yeah. night. It was like, and it was I think maybe it was the first time that we had actually worn.
I think from what I remember you guys maybe saying, or somebody in the band saying, it was the first time that you guys ever had worn shirts.
Well, I mean, we would wear dresses with it open in the front.
Yeah,
so you could, you know, yeah. you still had. God, let's talk about stupid shit you do when you're 22.
Yeah, it's actually bizarre for us to think of it now. I think we're like, oh my god, we did that. I think both of us sometimes are like, oh geez.
That's the evolution of the band, though. I'm sure
exactly.
when Pantera, I say that with Fozzy too. We started playing covers and having like alter egos, and you look back on it, you're like, that's such a long time ago. Like even mentally,
yeah.
Or Pantera when they had, you know, sprayed out hair, power metal, Magic of the Night, or whatever it was, and you know. Vinny's wearing makeup and it's like, what? But that's how the band starts and grows and to where you got to where you were today.
Yeah, I mean, we're proud of it. We came out with the message, but you know, we only did the completely topless with the tape for about 6 months. Then we wore the dresses with the tape. And then, yeah, that happened in Wolverhampton. And I think that really was the first time that we had actually just gone out normal.
And it was a great set.
It was really fun.
Ass, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was shortly after that we decided to just X out the X's completely.
But that's, like I said, that's the natural evolution of a band. You look at Motley Crue on Shout at the Devil to Theater of Pain to Girls, Girls, Girls. There's a definite different look every album.
Yeah, you know? I mean, allow yourself to grow. Sure. Allow yourself to do something different. We're artists. We're creative. There's, you know, different ways and different things that we can do all the time. I mean, we could go add bright red hair and it's blonde again. And tomorrow it's going to be green.
There's got some blue in there and she's got purple now. You used to have blue.
And it's going to be green tomorrow. So
it's fun. It's fun for us because we, you know, before we had the chance to play music full time, you know, we had other jobs that we couldn't have colored hair. You know, I was a mortician. You can't have brightly colored hair.
And we're going to talk about that which
field.
Is amazing, by
And we were both did some acting jobs and you can't really have, you know, brightly colored hair.
I was supposed to be like the little blonde girl next door in commercials, which I was.
And the country girl as well.
Yeah. And I could never have crazy colored hair to do commercials. So
right. You weren't allowed to
as
do
soon
that.
As we started this, we're like, coloring our hair.
Pink, blue, red, orange. How hard was it for you guys to get your passports back back that time?
Oh, that was
an all-day process.
We went to, it was the day of the Metal Hammer Gold and God Awards.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you were hosting.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
and early in the day, we had to get to the embassy in London, and we were there all day, and we almost missed the Golden God Awards.
Okay, but it didn't screw you guys up where you, like, missed gigs or missed flights or anything like that?
Nothing like that. But missing those drinks at that party would have been bad, right?
Right, exactly. But we're talking about, you know, being on the road in England, and I think that was your first tour of England. But now you guys are constant. I was talking to Carla yesterday. Always on the road. Like every time I look, it's like, oh, Butcher Babies are going with Guar, and they're going with In This Moment, and they're going here, they're going there. That seems to be your motto, is just to be on the road as much as possible.
Yeah, that's we have worked our asses off for this dream, and we want to be on the road constantly. It's nice to come home for a couple of weeks. We've been home for 2 weeks right now. Relax, you know, catch up with your dogs or hang out with other friends, but then you get that itch and you just need to be out playing your music.
Mm-hmm.
And we love being on the road. And I think 2016, we're out almost the entire time. So it's for us, touring is everything.
But that's pretty much for every band now. I mean, that's how you make
money. That's how you make money nowadays.
Right?
Yeah. So it's kind of like a necessary evil, whether you like it or not,
yeah.
You know? I think that one thing that we try to do is see different things in different cities that we haven't seen and just make it enjoyable, you know, while you're out there. I love being at home, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
I love being home and having my routine, but I love seeing new places. And now we have a bus, so it's, you know, it's really cool.
Because you were traveling in a motor.
We had an RV that we bought. We've always been very ambitious. You know, we didn't want to tour in a van because, and more power to everybody who can get through tours in vans. That's great. I mean, but we wanted to buy an RV and we built bunks into it so that we could save money.
So you actually bought this and owned it as a van?
Yeah, we did.
Did you write Butcher Babies on the side?
No.
I think there are many other profanities written.
But then
many dicks are drawn.
And we moved up to a bandwagon after the RV died. You know, it gets really hard to do an RV all the time. It's just not built to tour excessively.
We went through how many different generators? Yeah.
Was it dying like on the side of the road sort of thing? Were you guys ever stranded from that? Or
no, it would just, I mean, tires went flat all the time because of all the gear in the back. But the hardest thing was the generator going out. So it would be, you know, 100 degrees in Atlanta for the Mayhem Fest, and we don't have a generator or power in the RV. So that was tough.
So but now we have a bus, and it's like a whole new world.
Did you buy a bus now?
No. Yeah, okay. We bought a bus. Yeah, you know,
Vinny bought a bus.
That's Vinny. It's not us.
I thought about that. I wouldn't even want to do that because it'd be like buying a house.
Exactly.
As soon as you buy it, everything's going to start breaking down, and you can't just return it to the company.
And then every time someone farts in it, you're like, hey,
you stop it. Right. Don't put a coaster down.
Exactly.
But like for me, I have two, well, actually now only one rule for every show we play is that I have to have a shower in the morning. So like whatever, because some of the venues you play don't have showers, and they have to get a day room. How was it for you guys touring in an RV when part of it you guys have to look good all the time? Like you can't go on stage with a bun.
We have truck stop showers, you know, when we had to take showers, which we grew to love. I mean, it's like heaven being in there for an hour. You know, you pay your $12. It was $10 when we first started touring, and these jerks have moved up to $12 now. But you go in there, and it's like your own little world, your own little just slice of privacy for an
hour. Let's talk this. A lot of people don't know. You go to like a Flying J truck stop, and you can actually go rent a shower.
Yeah. Right. So you go in there. There's a very terrible towel. It's like a very dry towel.
Oh, they give you a towel,
They give you a towel, a floor towel, and a washcloth, and if you soap, and you go in, and it's like your own little hotel room. And
sometimes if you're nice to the attendant, they'll give you an extra towel. If you say, can I have an extra towel for my hair? It's really long. And they'll give it to you. But me and Heidi, we will dye our hair, you know, in these truck stops.
And it'll look like someone was murdered.
Right.
Hers is like a Smurf went missing.
Smurf ejaculated in the shower.
The first tour, we were in a truck stop, and man, the radios were going nuts. They said, what do they say?
One of them was like, something about the strippers.
There's two strippers up there in the shower area doing their laundry, and well, they were going nuts, and it was just so funny. People were peeking in, and it's like, oh my god.
That typically happens. This last time, actually, this last tour, we were at a truck stop, and I was just standing outside with the driver, just talking, middle of the day, we're about to leave, and I get a Facebook message from someone. He's like, is that you in the truck stop parking lot? I'm like, oh, man, they're onto us. They're onto us now. but that's how we survive. Also, just not really caring. We go out on stage and our hair's a mess within 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. So I don't really do it to the extreme.
As long as every tour, we have a mirror from Walmart that we get, you know, one of those $10 stand-up mirrors with me and Heidi get ready
like
in front of.
Like a full-length one?
Yeah, and we break one every tour. So we've got 1,000 years of bad luck together.
So you got that going for you.
Yeah, and but, you know, we have our little mirror and our stuff, and it's been pretty easy. You know, that was one thing that I worried about before we started touring. I was like, how is it going to be to get ready to take care of ourselves, to work out, do all these things? And it just happens very naturally. You just learn how to do it.
And
I think it honestly makes you a better person because you learn to live small. Mm-hmm. You learn how to live out of a suitcase. You learn how to get ready fast. And you just learn how to be
I came home after this last tour and looked at all my shit. I don't need any of this. I just lived out of a suitcase for 4 months. I don't need this
shit. And that's how it goes. We were just on the road for a month. And when you come home, you don't really know what to do. Like, I'm waiting for my tour manager to tell me what time I have to get up, and what time's dinner at, and bus call.
I read a really cool article about musicians being institutionalized, and it made so much sense. It was a really cool article. You're so everything is regimented.
Oh, I see.
And just like, and you don't know what to do sometimes when you come home and
yeah.
you get back into your real life and you look around at your stuff and it's just like, it's kind of like, oh my gosh, it's just a little overwhelming.
Right. You know? How do you step into a real life?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You guys are touring in the RV when you're talking about, let's say, going to like Canada or something
we
like
that. We
did that. In the RV.
In the winter.
Please tell.
Oh, explain. My God.
They're all both right. from snowy areas. That was, Detroit.
It was the winter. We were out with Marilyn Manson. And, you drive the RV yourself. And we trust the boys to do it because I'm not driving
That's
through boys' snow.
That's
boys' job. Yeah, I'm not driving through the
Take
snow.
Take the garbage
please.
Out and drive. Yeah.
And here's something that... was really almost hazardous, if you will. Life-changing would be another word for it. But we had this GPS that didn't really understand French.
Hmm.
And, you know, going through the east side of Canada, you get into French territory. We're leaving a show after, you know, it's late, snowing hard. And, you know, Jason's driving and we pull onto the freeway. It says to take the freeway. We pull onto the freeway. We're driving and we see some headlights in the distance. We're like, oh, this must be on the other side of the freeway. As it came closer, nope, we're on the wrong side of the freeway, going the wrong way.
In the ice, heat, and snow,
there's a terrible. Semi heading at
You're
us.
You're talking planes, trains, and automobiles.
This is
You're going the wrong way.
Yes, and Henry's asleep in the back, but everyone else is in the front. Our manager at the time was with us, and we're just, what do we do? What do we do? And there was this median, this really low
like a ditch sort of
median
thing, yeah.
covered with snow, so it looked like you could just go straight through it. So we just start straight through the median. We go out and sink.
Whoa.
Luckily, the semi came and it made its way by us, but we were stuck.
Was it honking at you? Like, what the hell are you doing, idiots?
I don't remember that because I just remember panic.
Oh, I'm sure.
Widespread panic in the RV. We were about to just getting head on with this us retards going the wrong way on the freeway.
Well, yeah.
And so we went out and we sunk into the median and we were going nowhere. We had to call a tow truck and they had to call a tow truck for them. And I just remember the emergency crew just looking at us like we were the biggest idiots they had ever seen. And we were. But yeah, we upgraded to a GPS that speaks all language now.
So, perfect.
So we're not running into any of those, hopefully.
Isn't it crazy, that sort of stuff that happens when you're on the road, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, just spending so much time actually on the highway itself, the fact that there isn't more accidents from bans, it really is, we've got guardian angels, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, we drove ourselves for a long time, too. Even we had a bandwagon, which is, you know, a mini tour bus for listeners that don't know that the bands can drive themselves, so it saves you money on a driver. And then, you know, our boys would rotate in and out of the driver's seat. But it just, you're so exhausted all the time from just playing the shows, loading in, loading out, and doing all this work that takes, you know, that you put into being a band, that no one in the band should ever drive. So luckily we don't have to do that anymore.
Right.
We have, you know, pro drivers now, and that helps a lot.
That's a big deal. Absolutely.
Everyone needs their sleep. Yeah. And that's how a lot of these accidents happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a band member's driving and they fall asleep because they've had such a long day.
Right.
So, I mean, those things, they happen. And you know, we definitely learned our lessons and all those, and or we'd end up in some strange neighborhoods, which
oh,
happened
yeah.
in Baltimore. And
drove through Cracktown or something.
We totally.
Oh,
we,
it was.
I just we were just town. Talking about this. I just wrote about it for something for a magazine, and we drove through this area. I think Henry was driving through this town, and there was a graveyard at the end of it, and like literally, the houses were a step away from this. So you open the door and you see graves right in front of your house, but the whole place was like a scene out of The Walking Dead. It was like on the walls, it was written like "Rest in peace, little so and so," and "Rest in peace," you know, these little gang names. And
these were different projects.
People were just walking around. I swear they just looked like zombies. And as the bus was going down the street, and I think like all of us were just petrified. There were people like knocking on the sides of it, trying to open the doors. And I'm like,
"Has
As the doors are locked.
By?
As we're driving by.
Like clinging on to it. Jeez. And I'm like, we need to get out of here right now. And we can't even stop anywhere because these people have already cased us. Like, we're done. We need to leave.
When we were doing that, we were on the way. We were writing Take It Like a Man at that time. Mm-hmm. And what we would do is on off days, we would rent a rehearsal space in the different city we're at. We'd set up our shit and write the album. And we were on our way to write the album, which was not far away from that little Walking Dead area. And so we scrapped it that day. We're like, nope, they already know.
Yeah.
Those people like had nothing at all to lose.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what happens.
That's
what's
scary when you get the, we had flat tires. We had a flat tire, I'm going to say somewhere in South Carolina, something like that, a state, West Virginia, whatever, mountain town. Guy comes up, old guy talks, basically Hills Have Eyes types up. Old guy talks to us for a while. What are you guys doing? What do you got in there? What are you, rock and roll band? Oh, it's a trailer full of stuff. He leaves. Another car pulls up. Okay. We had just put the tire on and we're like, just go, just go, just go. Two girls in the front seat with bikini tops on. And like, what are you guys doing? So we're leaving. Drive, 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 drive away. And there's a guy in the back seat lying down, holding a shotgun as we drove away. We saw that because you're on the bus looking down. They were pulling up to steal all our shit and steal the bus and do whatever. And you know what? And what's going to happen if you don't want to do it? They'll just kill you.
Yeah.
And that's like, and this is not, you know, this is the real world.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So
these are things that really go on. But that would be That's absolutely crazy, terrifying.
Yeah. Just like, well, the same thing that you guys went through, you know, but you mentioned how you were doing the Take It Like a Man record, which is your newest record. Mm-hmm. It's big, big success. First week, I think we were talking yesterday, but I think I Googled it. It was like 9,000 or something, which is a great, great first week in this day and age, especially for your band, which had doubled from the last or tripled from the last.
Yeah, tripled almost, right?
Yeah.
Interesting title though. I like the kind of the double entendre on that. What was your mindset behind it?
Well, it's not a gender-based thing, to be honest. For us, it's the term.
Mm-hmm.
Take It Like a Man. Finding your inner fight. You know, there's several moments in all of our lives where we had to basically stand back and fight for our lives, fight for ourselves, fight for what we believe in. And we had to, like Carla likes to say, buckle up our boots and take it like a man. And you know, for us, there's a lot of personal stuff on this album, a lot of deep emotional things, moments in our lives where we had to, like, again, take it like a man. And
which is great because it's not the literal meaning. It's just the actual concept of taking your licks and making it work. Right?
And, you know, it's a term. It's a term that's been around for a long time. And for us, it was so perfect. It came from the song Dead Man Walking on the album, where the lyrics are, where were you when I learned to take it like a man? Where were you when I learned to stand? And that's where it came from. And I think that explains a lot of different emotions that we've had in our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, Carl and I grew up in different areas, went through very different things, but we had the same emotional, I don't even want to say baggage, but experiences. And emotional experiences, but different physical experiences. And for us, it fits so well, and it was perfect. Mm-hmm. And it's just a term of fighting for yourself. And as soon as we thought of it, it was like bar none.
It's always
cool
when you get the album title, like that's it.
Yeah.
That's the phrase right there.
As soon as it was brought up, I mean, everyone's like, okay, come up with a couple other ones and you brainstorm
that
more.
That was always the one. We came up with some other ones that just for filler. Mm-hmm. You know, to tell them, okay, fine, here's a couple more. But we knew in our hearts that was the only title that was going to fly.
That's the one that fit kind of everything that you guys were talking about on the record. My favorite Butcher Baby song is from that. It's Monster's Ball.
Oh, thank you.
The video is amazing. Now, I know you guys are both, especially Carla, your artist and all this stuff. Did you do the makeup on that?
No, or? We have a friend who's been with us since the beginning. His name is Tony. He used to be our prop master. He used to do all of our blood. He made us a blood squirting base that would not stop squirting blood one night.
No matter what.
He filled an entire club with blood.
He would tape those legendary knives on.
Yeah, he was so good. And he's got a full-time job here in California, so he can never tour with us. But we wish he could because he's an amazing person, amazing friend. And he brought his crew of makeup people from Not Scary Farm over to do that stuff. And it was such a great day because we had all of our friends who had been with us since the beginning come to be a part of the video and get their makeup on. And they all had such a great little cameo in the video. You saw everybody's monster face. It was really cool.
Single person you see in that video, we're all friends.
Okay.
And friends from the beginning of everything. And so it was really fun to just spend a day in Hollywood and...
Who had the zipper face?
That was me.
That was good. I like that one.
I found something like that online. I went through and I researched so many different makeup things, sent them to the artist and like, make some of the monsters look like this, some of the monsters look like that. But that one, I was so dead set on having for myself.
Yeah,
I had a pair of boots that had the perfect zipper. So mm-hmm. I had to sacrifice the boots for the zipper.
Hey, come
that
on.
That zipper's
duh.
What I used.
So, of course.
Yeah, that was my dream to have that.
And you kind of expanded vocally as well. Not so always screaming, but some more singing.
Okay. We did. In fact, I think one of the songs that is on the album, Thrown Away, that has the most singing we've ever done. It's like complete singing. No screaming at all. And it's just a beautiful song. It was almost a song that we didn't end up putting on the record, but there was something really special about it. You know, Henry had this beautiful guitar part, and you know, I said one day, I'm like, you know what, let's save it. I have something really cool in mind for the verse. She had something great for the chorus, and we just threw it together, and it ended up being something that was really haunting and really special. And I feel like when we recorded it, we all just kind of got goosebumps and like, this is really different, but it's really good. And we actually played that song live on this last tour, you know, in the middle of all the hardcore stuff, and these kids in the audience, they'd be crying, and you just see them singing, and it was so
every lyric
so powerful.
It's you need that in a show, though. It can't just be punch, 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 punch to kind of give it a little bit of a breath in the middle of the set. That's great.
I mean, festivals here and there,
yeah,
we'll go out for the 30, 45 minutes and just kick everyone in the nuts. But when it comes to a show that's ours and we have a little bit of time to do these different things, we really want to, because these are emotional songs that we connect with on a completely obviously different level. But and then the kids come in and they bring their own interpretation, like everyone does with music, and it's incredible. On this album, we had an idea. We wanted to go in, we wanted to make it heavier, more live songs. But another thing too is we were very honest, and some of these songs called for, you know, clean singing and not as much screaming. But some of that was on Goliath too, but
that's a natural evolution.
Yeah.
When you're we were talking about Cookie Monster vocals, we're talking about like M Shadows, how they went from the screaming core to actually just singing, or even Phil Anselmo with, you know, Pantera, when he started talking about Cemetery Gates and Hollow and stuff like that. You need to do that as a singer, I think, because it just gives you more shades to paint with as an artist.
Our music is very diverse as it is. We don't limit ourselves to anything. You know, we don't say, hey, we are a metalcore neo thrash band. No, for us, we're just a metal band, and then, you know, we'll do a ballad here and there. We don't really care.
Yeah, well, that's what it should
be. We're not going to limit ourselves. We're just going to go out and make as much music as we can, as long as
it'll
allow
does.
Us.
Right. But let's talk about something. You're talking about the artists, being musicians being artists, but also you guys, actor Heidi and Carla's an artist as well, probably acting as well. Tell us about some of that stuff that you did before you came out here, and I want to hear about the mortician side of things. And I also want to hear about your acting stuff and some of the stuff you did, because it was some doubling and all that sort of stuff as well.
Oh, we did do that. Yeah, I was a stunt double for My Name Is Earl for a season for Jamie.
Who I saw about a month ago, and she's still hot.
Yeah, of course she's hot.
Yeah,
she'll always be hot.
Super hot, right?
But I was actually a radio DJ for 7 years. I did mornings.
In Utah?
I did it for
LA
5 years in Utah and 2 years here.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I moved to LA for initially, actually. I always loved music. I always did music, but, back in the day where I'm supposed to be realistic, I was a radio DJ. I did mornings there, and then...
What was your radio name?
Just Heidi.
Oh. Because there's Heidi and Frank in the morning out here. It's not the same Heidi.
No. Well, I did Playboy Radio on Sirius Satellite, which, when you think about Playboy Radio, it sounds, you know, like
it would
be very racy, but the morning show wasn't racy so much. There were certain things here and there that I wouldn't do.
I've done it before.
Yeah. So I did that for a couple of years. And then when I left that, I went to a hip hop station in LA. And let me tell you, that was bizarre. I don't know a thing or two about hip hop. I was in Compton on the weekend doing live remotes, driving an Escalade through Compton. Little blonde girl, like, you guys want to play some football? You know, luckily I had some other crew there with me, but it just didn't work. You know, Janet Jackson came into the studio one day, and I don't really know a thing about any of these people. I didn't know anything about the music.
Janet. I mean, you gotta know Janet,
right? But I was just like, yay. You know?
So were you doing interviews with them? Or
I did the weekends on the hip hop station.
Did you do an interview with Janet?
I did not. I was just there for
it. Did you say hi to her?
Well, I met her. Yes. That's cool. It was so funny. We had to decorate the entire studio with pink fabric.
Really?
Yeah, it was.
That was her request?
It ended up being really cute. But
I want to get that big where I can tell the radio station what kind of decor I want when I show up for the interview.
Well, please. Then the radio station went under and I decided to pursue music instead. And I did acting for years. When I was 11 years old, I think I did my first commercial. So
what commercials did you do?
I did like Nu Skin and all sorts of different kind of things. TV shows. My dad works in the film industry. So he started throwing me in that stuff at a young age. And I did it to make extra money here while I was, you know, trying to pursue
being a starving musician,
and it worked.
But you got that. That's all part of being a showwoman, mm-hmm. whatever, is having that on camera experience, the stage experience, the acting experience.
Yeah,
I saw when you jumped off the one of your risers with a broom. Looked like you're. There's a great picture. I think I can't remember somebody took it, like Scott Ishida or something.
Yeah.
We look like you're flying on a broom.
Yeah.
I love that one.
Yes, people do.
That's actually how she travels all the time.
Yeah, that's right. That made it easier.
You're in a bus. I'm on a broom.
You're on the broom. But either way, you're out of that damn motorhome. But how about you, Carla? I mean, you can do so much stuff.
Yeah. You know, I think creative people just, you know, feel the need to keep doing creative stuff.
Right.
And, you know, I moved to LA when I was just a kid to, you know, just. I think I was 18 or 19 when I drove my car across the country because I wanted to be a rock star.
The classic story.
But, you know, you go through a lot of other things in LA. You know, I worked for Playboy for a little while as a TV host, which I absolutely hated. And I did acting jobs here and there. And then I went to school to be a mortician, which I loved doing because after being in a world a Playboy where it's very one-dimensional, I got a chance to help people.
To say the least.
One-on-one. Yeah, to say the least.
Hey.
But I got to help people again. And,
How are you helping people?
I mean, planning funerals, helping people to start their grieving process. Even if I was just embalming, I feel like it's a very special experience with the body. I feel like there has to be a special kind of person to do that. Someone that you know is not going to abuse that body or be unkind or while they're doing...
I've been doing this show for a couple years, and you're the first mortician I've had on. So can you please explain what are you doing when you're embalming somebody?
It's a pretty simple process. It's just you have the arteries and veins. And so when you embalm, you're basically replacing the blood that goes through your circulatory system with embalming fluid, and it flows out the same way that blood goes through your tissues, and it makes your tissue stiff.
Are you sucking the blood out as you're putting the fluid in?
Yeah, as you're putting the fluid in.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a straw.
Right. Exactly. Duh.
Dinner.
Yes. You're taking out the blood through the vein and injecting through the artery. So the problem is that, you know, people are so unhealthy that you have to know every single artery and corresponding vein in the body because sometimes you have to embalm through different areas to make sure that you get every spot. Because if you leave a friggin' toe unembalmed, that thing will stink up a funeral. So it's actually a pretty fascinating thing. And if a body's been autopsied, you have to open it back up and do powder from the inside. So
powder, what does that mean?
It's like a powder form of formaldehyde that you pour inside the body. And
nothing starts to
rot. Everything has to be disinfected and so that there's no smells. And it's a really, I've always loved science since I was a kid. I was fascinated with the human body. I was fascinated with death and dying and the body processes. So For me, it was a great experience to do it. I liked embalming, but I found more so that I loved working with the families and really just one-on-one helping people. Because if you don't have someone really special helping you start your grieving process, you can get stuck and really kind of dwell in it.
It's a really hard time. It's a sensitive time, right?
Yeah, and a lot of people are so afraid of their own mortality that they don't want to reach out to someone that they know just lost somebody. They don't want to say, well, hey, just talk to me. And the best thing to do is really to let people who are grieving just talk. And not say, I know how you feel, or oh, God wanted their little angel back, you know, or all that kind of stuff. It's like, no, you know, just let them talk. Let them talk about the person. Let them, you know, say what they need to say. And I think it's a very important career. And I think that it takes a very special kind of person to do it, a very empathetic person. I also worked in hospice. And so I helped people who were, you know,
you're seeing both sides of
dying.
The coin, yeah.
So it's just, it was a very special thing. And I will always take it with me my whole life.
What about the eyeballs? Do you leave the eyes in it if it take the put?
Why would you take the eyes out?
I don't know. Do they rot? I mean, I don't know.
You close the eyes.
Okay.
Yeah, you close the eyes, but there's no stealing. No stealing of the eyeballs. This sounds like the beginning of a terrible horror movie.
Oh my God! Yes.
Where this creepy.
How many times?
It's the knife thing.
This
the start of the
creepy mortician broad steals all the eyeballs.
Yeah, puffs them out. That's our opening scene for the knife thing. That's it. It's our production. So how about from a musical standpoint? Where did you guys come from as far as influences besides Wendy O. Williams and the Plasmatics?
Very different. Yeah. Everyone in our band is very different. We all have a vast... I mean, I come from a nu metal world. Slipknot, Korn, I love Limp Bizkit. That kind of music to me was what really got me into metal. For Henry, he's more of that experimental with Meshuggah, Periphery,
math metal,
if you will. And then Jason, our bass player, he's a death metal kid, ride or die. And Chris, our drummer, is hardcore, just all the hardcore music. And then Carla.
So I think the first band I ever heard was Guns N' Roses, the first rock and roll band, and I liked it, you know.
You and Talina watched them. You and Talina.
Yes, me and Talina.
Talina's our mutual.
We have matching strange tattoos on our foot that we got at like 4 o'clock in the morning somewhere. Yeah. And mine is screwed up because it has a... It makes me so mad. It has a capital E and a capital S, so it's estranged. I'm like, oh no! And it drives me crazy.
I want to
cut my friggin' foot off.
Big S.
But anyways, that's how I. Anyways, it's just funny story.
Yeah.
But I heard Guns N' Roses and it made me love rock and roll. And from there, you know, I found thrash metal. You know, I was a very misfit kid, and all the kids that listened to thrash metal, I just felt like I belonged with them. And so, you know, I heard some old school Metallica when I was a kid. I think Shortest Straw was the first Metallica song I ever heard. And then I heard Anthrax and Slayer. And then I heard Pantera and was all over. I was like, I knew that that's what I wanted to sound like when I, you know, had a band. So, but we both are also the kind of people that are very well-rounded, and when we're getting ready for a show, we'll listen to, you know, we'll listen to rap, you know, listen to R&B. I love, you know, 90s girl power music. I love, you know,
we'll have 90s nights after the show.
Ours is 70s, like Cool and the Gang funk and stuff you know.
It's just, you know, for all of us, we have very many different inspirations. I actually was very inspired by Gwen Stefani. I mean, just her stage presence, just
amazing.
She was
her
different,
hooks,
her
melodies,
and her style, everything. But what we did is, what makes Butcher Babies different is we put all of those things into one big melting pot and created something different. And that's where, you know, you can't really pinpoint one major influence for Butcher Babies.
Have you ever been like kind of nervous when you met somebody that, like, at a festival, or maybe you've toured with somebody that you kind of dug?
It's always the most random people for me personally, like, because it'll be like there'll be tons of big rock stars around. Like last night there was a ton of rock stars. Lemmy party, and all my, you know, when I was a kid, you know, there's Slash, there's Duff, there's Lemmy, and who else was there? Lars was there.
Lars,
everybody
was there, yeah.
But it was Charlie, it's was people there, that like we were in a parking lot at Download Festival. It was our first Download Festival, and I saw the singer from Anti-Nowhere League, which is a smaller band than many people know, but I lost my shit and I ran over and I was like, oh my God, you're in. And he's like, yes, and now you've walked in my piss. And because he was actually peeing, I was so excited to see him, I didn't realize that he had just been peeing.
Isn't that the band that did So What?
Yes.
Yeah, so you were walking in his piss. So what?
So what?
So what? You boring little...
But it's people like that that I get excited over. I think we fangirled over Ice-T's wife, Coco, when we saw her at Hellfest.
We had a text. We were like, all right, if you see her, you know, or if I see her, we text each other Coco alert, and we're there. She's all Coco alert lunchroom. I'm like, ah! And I ran over. We had to get a picture with Coco. I think for us, it's like it's that. But when I first met Corey Taylor, because like as Carla said about Phil Anselmo, that's how she wanted to sound. When I first heard Corey Taylor, I wanted to be him. That was what I wanted to be. I want that pissed off, you know, fuck your faith or whatever. you know, for me, that's what I wanted. And so when I first met Corey, I was like, hi, and how to just like quickly walk away. For the most part, though, I never really get that way because my dad told me many years ago, and I said he works in the movie industry, so we were always around different people. And he told me a long, long time ago, he said, everybody shits in the morning. So, I mean, everyone's just the same, but meeting someone who gave me that much inspiration as a kid.
Yeah.
Still to this day, it was a little nerve wracking. Now I have my cool together a little bit more around him, but it's still a little like, ooh.
But that's the thing. Like for me, like for example, like Paul Stanley was one of my biggest influences. And over the last year, became kind of friends and actually then became good friends. The thing is, once you break down that wall of, oh my God, it's so-and-so, you realize that we're all kind of on the same boat. We're all on the road. Yeah. We all have pretty cool jobs where you don't have to conform to, you know, if you want to have orange hair or, you know, blue hair or whatever it is, you can do it. And it's just like, we're all the same that took a chance to go out and do something that no one said you could do.
Yep.
And then once you realize that, everyone's pretty cool,
yeah.
You know, which I always get a real cool sense out of that when you find that.
Yeah, which is everyone just is one big family, and that's one thing that I didn't really expect going into this, but I'm so grateful for. And you know, even all the girls in this metal world, all of us have really bonded together.
And we
created
there's
a girls' club. Yeah, but I mean, as it turns out, you know, we go on these tours, and you create a family.
Yeah,
and it's always at the festivals a big reunion, and everyone's it's like high school but not as shitty.
But know? It must be kind of cool, like we're talking about kind of there's a real, I'm not going to say resurgence, but a real strong presence of girls in heavy rock now within this moment. You guys just toured with them, or Hailstorm, or there's a great band in England that we tour with called Dirty Youth. There's another band in Canada called Sumo Psycho, all have female front singers.
Yes.
But I mean that must be kind of cool for you guys too. It's like, wow, there's a whole bunch of us.
Well, when we first started six years ago, there weren't that many. And you know, if there were, there weren't very many getting a lot of making waves, and Maria was out there kicking ass, and Lizzie was, but as were a couple here and there, but they weren't as prevalent as they are now.
Now
when we all meet up, it's like a pat on the back, like, oh, it's so nice to either meet you or see you again. People think that us girls would be catty with each other and it'd be like cheerleaders fighting, but it's not. There's such a love and such a respect for each other, and there's an empowerment.
And really, all of us are doing something different right now. Every one of these bands that we just mentioned all have their own little flavor. So
that's true.
It's not competition. You know, it's pretty cool to see everybody being successful.
Were you a cheerleader in high school
and college and for the NBA?
The reason why I say that is because you've mentioned it twice.
No, I know. I get it, because I was a cheerleader and they are very catty.
Really?
Because it was a sport, and I was a power tumbler and a track athlete, so for me that was
why you're so catty.
Yeah.
Just
tell her attitude.
Meow.
Jeez Louise.
And I do talk like a cheerleader. I noticed when I listen back. When I did radio, I feel like I didn't have that chicken head voice, but now when I listen back to...
But that was Playboy Radio, so you're probably being a little more sexy.
No, I did mornings in Salt Lake for 5 years on a legit station. You know, so for me, I listen back now and I'm like, oh my God, I sound like a chicken head cheerleader. No,
I hate you all.
No, but I did it professionally and I loved it.
For NBA? For what team?
Jazz. Utah Jazz.
Utah Jazz. Mm-hmm. Oh. So what does that entail? Like, you don't get paid to do that, do you, to be a cheerleader?
You do, but not a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, you just go out there and I was on the stunt team. You think of like Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders go out there and dance. I wasn't a dancer. I was a stunt one, like the one they throw up in the air and you do a bunch of flips and stuff.
Okay.
So I was on the stunt team. So that's how it was for me. For me, it was a sport in that sense. And there's
there's a lot of athleticism.
Yeah. And I was a track athlete before that, since I was like 7. I had competed in the Junior Olympics, but broke my back in college.
How'd you break your back?
Pole vaulting. So
what?
So after the whole recovery process,
hold on a second. How do you break your back pole vaulting? Did you land right in the middle of the pole and just like kind of hang there?
It was a stress fracture that just ended up breaking after time. There are different things in track that aren't really good for your back, but
pole vaulting obviously being one of them.
Yeah. I must have just been doing things wrong. But after I broke my back and the recovery process happened, I could still cheer. I just couldn't do track as well. I wasn't as good of a high jumper. I was a high jumper. That's what my main thing was in the Junior Olympics, was high jump. And even though I'm short. But so I used those jumps and converted it into being, you know, a fun,
that's how you can
really
jump off the riser and ride a broom.
Yes.
That's part of that. That's the cheerleading. Tell us a little bit about your artwork, Carla. I follow you on Instagram, which is how you're friends with someone nowadays. You do amazing stuff.
I think that, a lot of metalheads are actually artists as well. I know when I was a kid, that's all I cared about was art and metal. And I would sit in my room and I would draw out what the songs meant to me and make like little comic books out of these songs, you know, these old, from the old thrash metal bands and everything.
Like
Hollow. I did a whole thing for Hollow. I remember that. That was my favorite one out of that song. I did a lot of Pantera stuff.
The comic book
version of all these songs. I wish I still had them. My parents, I think, threw away everything. I got to go home and search for everything, but I would do all the old Metallica songs and Orion was always my favorite Metallica song ever, and I made up a whole character for this song. And
interesting, instrumental.
Exactly. It's just so weird that it's the only song that has no lyrics, and I love it. But I always grew up drawing, and I stopped drawing for a long time because I spent some time in art school, and they just beat the joy out of creating for me. So, years and years went by, and I picked up a pencil again, a few years back, and I was like, I want to start doing this again, and I couldn't stop. And it's been so great to have that release. You know, not only do I have it through music now, but I have it through art. And
great too, especially when you're on the road. So much downtime just sitting around.
Yeah, it's great. And then I started posting some of my stuff, and I was really shy about it at first. I'm like, I don't, if I want people to see this. And then the fans were responding really well, so I started to sell prints of my stuff. And
Characters have really big boobs.
I love boobs. I've always liked boobs since I was a kid. I've had a thing. Even when I was a kid, I would always draw women with giant boobs and very sexual things. I guess I was a screwed up kid. I don't know.
I was going to say me too.
All I cared about was sex. Sex boobies. And death.
It's just like two circles and a stick figure. Yeah.
That's the ultimate woman, right? Yeah.
Dead girls in coffins. That's all I care. But yeah, so it's great to be able to, like I said, get that release drawing, and it's been very successful for me.
That's cool.
On the road during our downtime, or before show or right after, you'll come on the bus and Carl will be drawing and I'll be sewing.
Yeah.
Oh, you sew?
Yeah.
Do you make your stage
arts
here?
Arts and crafts.
I make custom shoes and shirts and stuff.
Oh, like blankets or?
No. Okay. I don't knit sweaters.
Can you knit me some gloves, please? Yeah, give me some gloves.
Yeah, but it's funny. Most people are like, you go in and they're just like, I don't know.
Partying.
Party time. Yeah. She's drawing and I'm sewing.
Yeah. That's how it is now.
Yeah.
We just did a tour in England with Nonpoint, and those guys were in bed at like 11 o'clock at night, which is great when you're bus sharing, but it's like, is there anybody up to do anything? So it's just me, Talina, and Jack, our guitar tech, listening to Ozzy.
Yeah.
So you mentioned 2016, you guys are on the road the whole year already booked.
We have, I think, most of the year booked. We know what we're for sure doing for the first, few months. We're going out on tour with Cradle of Filth.
Okay.
January through March.
It's another good mix.
Yeah. The cool thing about our band is that we've been able to tour with so many different kinds of bands. Cradle of Filth is the first black metal band I think we've toured with. But
that'll be really fun.
But it's great that we can fit in with so many different kinds of music.
It's Marilyn Manson. It's In This Moment. It's Cradle of Filth. That's great.
And then There's a lot of stuff lined up. Obviously, it hasn't been announced yet. Well, you know how that is.
Yes, exactly. Just wait.
I accidentally did that one. I leaked something once upon a time. And
did you get yelled at?
I feared for my life. So, yeah, we're really looking forward to spending a lot of time out.
Yeah.
You know, pounding the pavement with "Take It Like a Man."
Yeah,
we're really
sure.
proud of that album. So it's we want everyone to hear it.
Truck stop showers and everything.
Yep. What's your favorite?
Last question. What's your favorite song to play live?
Gosh, I think that, I mean, I love, my favorite song off the new album to play live is The Butcher. I love that song. But I think of all time, I think Jesus Needs More Babies for His War Machine, because the kids just go crazy for that song.
Yeah, me too.
They know it's time to crowd surf during that song. And so they do every night. And it's insane the amount of kids we get to crowd
party.
Surf.
People just go insane.
It's a great title too.
Yeah, it's a fun song. That's one of the first songs.
It's a feel good song.
Yeah.
Jesus Needs More Baby for His War Machine. It's a fun song.
It's feel good hit of the summer. That was one of the first songs we wrote. It's on our very first EP. And it lives in the set. We can't take it out. You know how there's just those that you just can't take out. I don't want to. I love it. Off the new album, I would say I really, really enjoy playing Monsters Ball.
It's fun. It's such a quirky song.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very quirky.
Good hooks, good singing. That's and you can do it. You can jump on your broom.
Yes, and my broom just lives right there anytime I need to fly.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Great conversation with the Butcher Babies. Their tour starts Tuesday night in Philly. They're touring with Cradle of Filth. It's a great double bill. If you want to see a great rock show, go to butcherbabiesofficial.com and you can find out all the dates and ticket information. Also, if you want to go check out Carla's art and her books, she just released her third annual sketchbook, -3. It's full of the art that she draws while she's on the road. She also just premiered her Soul Sucka comic book series, and her first full-length novel, Death and Other Dances, is all available at carlaharvey.bigcartel.com. Go check that out. She's a very talented girl, great artist, a great writer as well. And also, you need to go hear the new Butcher Babies record, Take It Like a Man. You can get that on Amazon. And you know what to do. You know the drill. Support the Butcher Babies. Support Talk is Jericho via the Amazon links. Go to podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button at the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got Amazon links for the USA, the UK, and Canada. Every time you use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to the show to help us cover production costs. You can buy just about anything on Amazon. I just bought a microwave on Amazon, okay? It's true. And using the TIJ Amazon links, they won't cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or extra charges. Once again, go to podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. And my sponsors are there too. You got easy access to ddpyoga.com/Jericho and the new DDP Yoga Now app to... there's TrueCar, there's DraftKings.com. Use my promo code Y2J and play for free with your first deposit at DraftKings.com. And I got one more thing to tell you about. It's a personal request from Cheyenne and Sierra, my twin daughters. They have their own YouTube channel. It's called CC and Shy Vlogs and Videos. CC, that's S-I-S-I, and Shy, C-H-E-Y, Vlogs and Videos. Go over there and check them out. The 10 things to do to make a sleepover awesome was very, very cute and funny. And also the Bean Boozled Challenge. Have you played this game where you eat good jelly beans and eat crappy ones? Well, I'm in that one. And they got me to eat a skunk-flavored jelly bean. I almost puked. So go check it out. CC and Shy, Vlogs and Videos. And check out the 60-second AP news headline, which is coming up next. So that's about it. Got all wrapped up, man. I appreciate you guys. You know I love you. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. What more do you need? We'll see you on Friday. A big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
Ooh, all right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards. The perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.
Trump's victory. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute.
It's always a lot of fun when you win. If you work hard and lose, that's not acceptable.
At the White House, President Trump welcomed Republicans from the House and the Senate who passed a bill overhauling the tax code. The president says the middle class will be seeing the effects of this bill very soon.
The typical family of four earning $75,000 will see an income tax cut of more than $2,000. They're going to have $2,000, and that's, in my opinion, going to be less than the average. You're going to have a lot more than that.
The tax overhaul bill also includes a corporate tax cut.
We have companies pouring back into our country, and that means jobs, and it means really the formation of new, young, beautiful, strong companies.
Democrats have criticized the tax package as a giveaway to corporations and the rich. The tax cuts for businesses are permanent under this tax bill, but reductions for individuals and families will expire after a decade. I'm Ed Donahue.